The last item we have on our agenda this afternoon is our budget, which we've blocked a substantial period of time for comment and presentation and discussion. It's a no-action item. And I don't believe, or are we able to proceed at this point, or can we start this? How do you suggest we proceed?
We can
We can start, Chief, and I'll kind of lay out the various components of it, and when Mr. McCarthy gets here, then he can speak on behalf of the Open Courts Coalition and some of the activity that he's been doing.
And I would ask, for the benefit of our audio cast members, to have all of the presenters please state your name and title. Thank you.
Ron Overholt.
Zlatko Theodorovich.
Kurt Child.
Marianne O'Malley.
Thank you.
So thank you, Chief, and members of the council. The governor released his proposed budget for 12-13 on January 10th. The proposed budget contained no immediate cuts to the branch, which we were very appreciative of and grateful for, that was the first time in several years that had been the case. There was some additional funds added back in, not to the extent that we had requested, but certainly I think pleased that there was a recognition by the governor and staff at the Department of Finance that the courts had been cut as far as it was possible to cut us. What is included in the budget is a series of triggers, as you may know, and we were included in those triggers, and the governor indicates at this moment that those triggers would need to be pulled if his initiatives on taxes does not pass in November. We will certainly be having discussions about how to not be a part of the trigger. We don't take positions on taxes, but we certainly take a position on an additional $125 million cut would be devastating to the branch. And, in fact, we need to be going in the other direction in terms of restoring funds to the branch. What we're going to have today is a presentation by Zlatko, our finance director, in terms of the budget itself, both briefly on the state budget and where that is, and then the specific proposal to the branch, and then Kurt Child to talk about the proposed solutions that we have identified and had conversations with the other branches of government, and to summarize what some of those discussions have been. And then we have Council Member Judge O'Malley to discuss activities and advocacy by the Bench Bar Coalition, which she is co-chair. And then Mr. Neil McCarthy will be here. He's the president of the Consumer Attorneys of California and co-chair, along with Mr. Paul Kiesel from Los Angeles, of the Open Courts Coalition, that have been very active in terms of advocating on behalf of the branch budget. Along with those presentations, we will have two brief videos that I mentioned earlier on that I think highlight impacts to court users and the community on when courts are not available to those individuals, and what some of those impacts are that we'll be able to see toward the end of the presentation. So, Zlatko, if you will use the front end for us.
Certainly. Thank you, Ron. We put on three separate phone calls immediately after the budget was released to give the court leaders an opportunity to hear sort of at a high level the budget presentation from the governor. So I won't repeat all of it, but I will repeat some of it, I think, which is important to understand and to carry away from this discussion, to understand the context from which our budget was created and how it fits into the overall state budget. I'm going to read just one line from the governor's letter to the legislature. It says, "The budget that I am submitting today keeps the cuts made last year and adds new ones. The stark truth is that without some new taxes, damaging cuts to schools, universities, public safety, and our courts will only increase." So I think there in the message to the legislature, there was a recognition that the courts have had damaging cuts, but it sort of sets us up to for the trigger cuts that come later in the budget presentation that without the additional revenues, there will be further damaging cuts. The 12-13 budget identifies a budget gap of $10.3 billion, and part of that is due to a worse-than-end-of-year numbers from the summer. There's some revenue declines that they had not anticipated. There were a number of budget solutions that were not implemented in a timely fashion, and therefore you have a $10.3 billion budget hole. To address the $10.3 billion shortfall, the governor identified in two major areas and methods of addressing the budget. First was a $4.2 billion of cuts to be done regardless of what happens with the tax package. And those cuts were fairly substantial on health and human services and education, primarily reductions to CalWORKs, Medi-Cal, child care. One of particular note is a reduction in home-to-school transportation in Prop 98, which the legislature, I believe, just attempted to is putting a bill towards the governor to restore those cuts. Another major hit to local government is the making state-mandated local programs permissible and therefore no longer requiring the state to reimburse counties and cities and locals for mandated programs. That's almost a little over $800 million. So that in total is $4.2 billion of the budget solution. $4.4 billion of additional revenues are proposed by the governor through an initiative to increase the sales tax as well as taxes on upper-income individuals. Similar to the budget that was passed in the summer, there are trigger cuts behind that. I wanted to point out the lion's share of the trigger of $5.4 billion falls on Prop 98. About $4.8 billion of the $5.4 billion falls on Prop 98 reductions. $200 million for University of California and an additional $200 million for CSUS, leaving then $125 for the courts. No prescription on how we have to deal with that to the extent they materialize, but they have portrayed them as a potential 3-day closure per month. But again, that's no prescription by the administration, just a matter of illustration. I think one thing that is important to note is that the governor indicates his commitment to paying down the wall of debt, and the reason that I bring that to your attention is because it includes the loans that were taken from our construction funds, so there is a commitment by the administration to pay those back, albeit not until the 13-14 fiscal year, and the largest amount, the $350 that was borrowed, won't be coming to us until the 14-15 fiscal year, so we will be seeing them coming back, but they won't be coming back anytime soon. I think that I'll wrap up my presentation in terms of the overall budget with this point, is that the issue with this particular recession has been its duration and its painful duration. One line from the budget presentation is that the state is forecast to recover non-farm jobs lost during the Great Recession in the second quarter of 2016. That's approximately 84 months after the end of the recession. Whereas the previous six recessions, full job recovery was achieved between 4 and 56 months. So even in a worst-case scenario, we're almost 30 months beyond what was the worst case in the last six recessions. So it's been a long and drawn-out and slow recovery, and obviously California is hampered by its continued weakness in its housing market, but it's been buffered a bit by growth in high-tech. So we're still struggling. The governor doesn't anticipate any recessionary periods over the next handful of years. So it's a slow and guarded recovery that the governor's anticipating, and that's his budget presentation. As far as the budget for the branch, as Ron mentioned, there are no immediate cuts to the branch. There are the trigger cuts of $125 million. There are some restorations, albeit not to the extent that we had requested. There is a $50 million in additional fee authority, which is important. There is additional language in the budget allowing the council to adjust the allocation of the cuts that have already been taken, which is also important authority for us. There are some other funding augmentations that were provided to the branch related to court security, a particularly important issue to some of the counties that lost their court security funding and realignment for perimeter security. There's funding for health and retiree benefits. There's also continued funding for realignment, revocation, hearing workload. All those issues will need to be revised and revisited through the budget working group to address the allocation there. So essentially we have some positive message in the budget in terms of recognition of the cuts, some funding that could be provided through the fee authority, but not the general fund restoration that we were looking for. And I'll turn it over to Kurt now for our advocacy efforts this spring.
Chief and members, good afternoon. I just want to follow up quickly. We've all had the opportunity to talk a little bit about what the budget strategy that we're looking at as we move into the budget year this year. In many respects, there's some good news there in the governor's budget that we're not talking about additional reductions as we move into budget hearings. Quite honestly, we've got very few issues that we think will probably be on the agenda for our budget subcommittee hearings, but we do have some big issues on talking about with the members our budget strategy as we move forward. And just as a reminder of what that strategy is, and then I'll talk a little bit about the discussions we've had thus far as we move forward. But as the reminder, the $653 million is the cumulative hit to the judicial branch over the last 3 years. And so by any measure, whether a percentage or in actual dollars, that is a significant reduction to the branch. Now, we have been able to, through your efforts, to do some redirections from other funds over the course of these years. And so fortunately, we have not seen the full weight of these ongoing $653 million reductions. We've been able to use construction funds, CCMS, mod fund, all contributing to the solution to cushion the reductions. And in some respects, we've become a bit of a victim of our own success in doing that, because every time we sort of work through our own solutions with the legislature, they think that we're always capable of doing that and can and should do it. The problem is now with these cumulative reductions, we've hit a point where we're running out of those kinds of solutions. And so that's why we've worked on the approach that I'll outline here just very quickly that I think is getting a very favorable response in the sense that it is sensible approach and I think a reasonable approach that the branch is taking. First of all, we are not suggesting to the legislature or to the governor that we need to be in a position to put us back where we were in the 7-8 budget. That's not realistic. It's not credible to make that argument anymore. And as we've had conversations, the chief having conversations in the governor's office, there is an expectation that everyone is doing with less in this new world. And I think there we have tried to propose an acknowledgement of doing that. And in so doing, we worked with Judge Rosenberg and the presiding judges and Allen and the court execs on looking at where could we think to credibly make a new baseline. And of that $653 million, roughly what we think is that with the reductions that have been operationalized by you all over the course of these last few years, is that we would try and maintain funding at the 11-12. In other words, not lose any ground over this year. And to do that, essentially, of that $350 million, although we're not saying that it is leaving sufficient funds for the courts to fully stay open and provide services, we are sort of rebaselining, and what we've told them is rebaselining at $300 million that we would need to stay at the 11-12. So in other words, eating $350 million for the current and near foreseeable future, but we still, in order to recover from those ongoing reductions, we need $300 million. So in trying to reach that solution, we've got three major parts to that. The first part is, as we Zlatko mentioned, we've asked both the governor and as we're having conversations with the legislature that there needs to be a restoration of that last $150 million. So as you recall, $350 million hits to the branch this year alone. The last $150 million that we saw in the last few days before that final budget was really an amount that I think put us over, but it's also an amount that as the chief was having conversations in those last couple of days, that I think leadership, governor's office, was giving us some sense that that would be the first to be in a position to come back. So we're proposing over the course of the next 3 years a restoration of that $150 million to bring some stability in branch planning, of which $100 million would be in the budget year. Governor's budget did not include any new general fund restoration. The other pieces that we're putting together is we have, again, we're looking for ongoing solutions. We do realize, though, in order to get to that $300 million this year, we will have to still do some one-time solutions, and proposing $50 million in redirections that we think we will be able to look closely again at such things as construction funds in a way, as we've always discussed, not jeopardizing the projects or delaying the projects, and into the other funds. As well as we did this year. Along with that is the $50 million number in increased civil fees. We started quite early in discussions with our branch stakeholders in the bar to talk about increasing some fees. Those discussions have gone very well. I think there is some areas where the bar is willing to step up and propose increasing some new civil filing fees. Their concern is and will continue to be they're not interested in raising fees if they're going to get sucked off into the general fund. They're willing to, you know, be part of the solution and part of the family, if you will, in trying to come up with a solution, but not if it ends up in the general fund. And as you recall, the year before last year, there was about $70 million in fee increases. There were some parking fee increases in there, but a large part of civil filing fees. Then when we saw the $350 million reduction, they're saying, well, we stepped up with these new fees, and they got sucked off into general fund. So we're continuing to have that discussion. It's important, I think, for them to keep that message out. And based on where we've ended up right now, I have a high level of confidence that we hit that $50 million mark in ongoing fees. And we will have to address in another year the sunsetting of that $70 million, or we'll just be increasing fees to replace fees. So there's another $100 million as part of the solution. We do, however, want to look closely at additional efficiencies that we might be able to find both in the what's going on in trial courts and Kim and your group that's working on that effort, and had the conversation with Judge Edmund and Judge Wesley the other day, and we have some members of the legislature very interested in helping us look at some potential solutions in the form of what might be statutory relief, and those get us ongoing. So whereas the $50 million we're talking about redirection, we would want to be in a position that, you know, we'd sort of have one trade-off on the other and put us in a position to get more ongoing relief through that. So we will be and are in the process of collecting all ideas that you are forwarding on and that we're putting together that hopefully we will be able to move on with the legislature this year. And then lastly, for the last $100 million, as you know, there are fund balances that exist in the trial courts, and there is rarely I have a budget conversation with a member or a staff member in the legislature without a reference to those. I think there is a sense that they absolutely have to be part of the solution this year, and through the efforts and discussions that we had both with the PJs and court execs was that $100 million would be part of the solution. So that becomes the third leg of that stool. I do want to emphasize, because the next question I get every time on that discussion is, so is that meaning we're going to sweep up reserves and redistribute those? Well, certainly, you know, that will be a call for the council to make, but that is not how we are discussing or urging in our budget discussions with the legislature. The intent is that courts will be able to use their reserves or not use their reserves as they see fit in trying to deal with solutions into coming into this next year. And then finally, Zlatko mentioned one piece that I think is just crucial, and this was a matter of some import, I think, Chief, with you when in those last days of the budget that. Absolutely, the council should have the authority to make the policy decisions and calls on how to allocate the budget and any reductions. That authority gave us, as the legislation, the budget legislation directed the cuts to the trial courts, that gave the council the authority to be able to make the calls that it did, between using construction funds to redirect to trial courts. CCMS, as you recall, $56 million was moved into the trial court trust fund, or moved to trial court operations as well. And so we will continue to advocate strongly to ensure that there is as much discretion for you, the council, to have to be able to allocate those reductions. So with that, I'll just mention one other thing with our esteemed colleagues here who will follow. We have worked closely with the Open Courts Coalition, BBC, on this message, and I can say that we are able to carry that message and are carrying that uniform message and the approach that we've just outlined, and I would suggest that the editorial you saw this morning in the LA Times is exactly that, the result of a joint effort from coming within and with all of our stakeholders saying enough is enough on cuts to the court. And, you know, and that one, the message is clear. Do a restoration as we're advocating, first of all, and second of all, that we should be pulled out of the trigger, so that shouldn't be hanging over our head as we get through July and trying to figure out how to get through November. So I'll stop with that.
Thank you, Kurt. Any questions at this point before we hear about some of the advocacy from Judge O'Malley? And then we've been joined by Neil McCarthy, who is the president of the State of the Consumer Attorneys of California and co-chair of the Open Courts Coalition. So we'll let him catch his breath before we ask him to go.
Judge Rosenberg? I have a comment but I on behalf of the trial courts, but I'm certainly willing to wait until we hear from the other two presenters.
Okay. Anyone else?
And 10 seconds is plenty of time to catch your breath.
More than enough.
Judge O'Malley, would you like to talk about BBC?
Yeah, thank you. Chief and fellow colleagues of the council, I'm here on behalf of my co-chair, Danny Murphy, and myself for the Bench Bar Coalition. And we're here to talk to you about the strides that the Bench Bar Coalition has been making within the last month to stress not only to the legislature, but also to fellow court users and to the public at large, the impacts of these cuts on the courts, and also with regard to AB 1208. So it's been a joint message from the BBC and a really concerted and really organized effort on behalf of our organization, of which I'm very proud to be a part of. Starting January 5th, we had a special conference call where we had nearly 50 BBC members, and it was interesting because that was the day that the governor had put out his budget. And so we had word on that day that there weren't any cuts to the courts directly, although the trigger was involved. And so while it was good news compared to the news that we had had the past years of devastating cuts, there was still nervousness amongst the BBC. And of course, the Bench Bar Coalition is judges and attorneys, court users who know the impact of these cuts. They see it every day in their jobs, in working with the courts and working for the courts. So that was a very, very pointed meeting and really took to heart what was coming with regard to if the trigger had to be pulled with regard to the additional $125 million. So the 50 BBC members really had an opportunity to hear about that budget as well as where we need to go from there. And so it really got everybody very inspired and very motivated of what we needed to do the next month and in the next coming months with regard to the budget to get our word out. The next meeting was we had approximately 40 BBC members who actually have either gone to the district offices of their legislators, made calls, sent letters, had some sort of contact with either key staff members or the legislators themselves with regard to, you know, what we've learned with regard to the budget and the cuts and where the courts stood and the help that we need. You know, we are the third branch of government. And so the voice was unified. It was one voice, and it was loud and clear. And so the 40 BBC members really had made an impact, have been contacting those members, and we will continue to do so. We met again last night, and I'll talk about that in just a moment. On Wednesday, January 9th, we had the honor of meeting with a conference call with the co-chairs of the Open Courts Coalition. And I have to tell you that this is a very distinguished and influential group of leaders in the legal and business community who we are so fortunate to have working on behalf of the courts and putting out the message. They are the work that they have put out in such a short amount of time, and I know Mr. McCarthy will elaborate on this, has been so impressive that as much as the BBC has been involved in, I mean, we actually were very, very impressed with the work that the Open Courts Coalition has done. Just to mention briefly the Stand Up for Justice rally that took place on Wednesday, January 18th in Los Angeles, the video that they have created, so professionally done and really by some people who past governors, people who are involved in the community, leaders, justice partners, my sister-in-law, Nancy O'Malley, the DA in Alameda County was part of that. So I know it's people who know what they're talking about and who are giving a message in this video of, you know, enough is enough, that we need to help out the courts. Also, I know that more rallies are being planned, and I'll let Mr. McCarthy talk to that about getting the word out, continuing to get the word out. We also had a webinar. We were fortunate enough to have Zlotko, as well as Marsha Carlton, the AOC's director and assistant finance directors, do a webinar with the Bench Bar Coalition members to educate them with regard to the presentation of the budget, where we stand. And it was very helpful for our BBC members to be able to get the facts, the straight facts, because, as you know, there's been a lot of disinformation that's being put out there. And so it was very important to the BBC members that when we talk to the legislators, we have the facts and we have them straight. And so when they ask us questions, we can really put forward the numbers accurately as we know them. And so that was very, very helpful to really get that information put out to the members. We had our quarterly meeting yesterday afternoon from 4 to 5. And again, we were updated on the progress of 1208 and where people stood. And again, our Bench Bar Coalition members are going to make another push as best as they can to the legislators out there to let them know that the majority of court users, the majority of presiding judges, in fact, 55 of the 58 aren't for it. 44 have actually taken a position to verbally in an outspoken manner oppose it, and others take no position, which by no means means that they are for it. And so to really stress that, so we put that message out, and we'll continue to do that tomorrow and if need be until the vote is made. Again, the Benchbar Coalition is contacting local bar associations to get them involved, really a more of a community outreach. I know I was contacted by members of my local bar association saying, what can we do? We've been contacted, we're willing and able, and this is a cause that we now want to join. We get it. Now it's affecting us, you know, and our clients, and so we want to be there. And so I'm very proud, Chief, and members of the council, to let you know the efforts of the BBC. Will continue to do so, and I'll invite any questions or comments again after we hear from Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Judge O'Malley. Welcome, Mr. McCarthy.
Thank you, Chief. My name is Neil McCarthy. I'm with a firm called Kotchett, Petrie & McCarthy. And as mentioned, I'm the president of the Consumer Attorneys of California. I'm not here in that capacity. I'm here as a co-chair of the Open Courts Coalition to tell you a little bit about what we've been doing and a tremendous amount of momentum that we've been able to pick up and let you know that from the committee, we believe we're just at the beginning and we're going to make much more progress as we move forward. The Open Courts Coalition is a group of lawyers from all walks of the practice. We have plaintiff lawyers, defense lawyers, district attorneys, legal aid lawyers, criminal defense attorneys. Every aspect of law in every part of the state is represented. And what we've done over the past 4 months is get together and have a very strategic plan for how to try to assist this effort of getting more funds to the courts. There was some mention of a video. We're going to see that in a moment. There's been several steps that are taken. First of which was a video, which I'd like to mention that most of the work was done by my co-chair, Paul Kiesel, did a terrific job editing that video and putting it together. We had former Governor Duke Majan on it, former Governor Davis, Attorney General Harris, the president of the Chamber of Commerce, all speaking about the need for more funding for the courts. And the impact of the video and the feedback we've been getting has been extremely positive. In that we're hearing from small businesses, large businesses, insurance companies, how unique they felt that all these different segments of the legal society came together on this one video and how important the message was. We also had a rally in Los Angeles last week. We had a turnout of about 300 or 400 people. The rally was mentioned in today's LA Times op-ed piece about court funding, which I'm sure everyone has discussed by this point. Because of the success of the rally, and let me mention, by the way, that we were very grateful to have the support of many of the unions in Southern California. The trades, several other unions participated very actively, and we're very grateful for their support. Because of the success of that, we will be having a similar rally in San Francisco, just here across the street, where they're used to rallies. We expect to get a turnout of 500 or more by the initial reaction we've gotten. We expect that to take place in April. We're working on some dates now with the city going through the permit process. Thirdly, in addition to the rallies and the video, really the nuts and bolts of what we do is direct advocacy with legislators. So we've been having a series of meetings with the speaker, the president pro tem, had a brief meeting with the governor to discuss the topic of court funding and let those elected officials know that we are not here speaking as a plaintiff group or defense group, but rather a unified group of all practitioners throughout the state. And it's been our experience that we have much more power when we go through speaking with one voice on behalf of a much broader constituency. We are going to have a Justice Day in Sacramento where members of the Open Courts Coalition and their respective constituencies go and have individual meetings with legislators through this budget process. We still believe there's time before June to shape this discussion and try to pick up some key votes that right now may be waffling. We're going to have a series of district office meetings with legislators. We had a group here of about 100 lawyers that was organized at the state bar about 3 weeks ago. We had state bar leaders from San Diego all the way up to the very northern counties who have been deputized to turn around and meet with their local elected officials, have these meetings, show the video, and describe not so much the concept of access to justice, which sometimes gets lost in Sacramento, but the human impact of what we're seeing, the human impact of TROs not being placed, and people's lives being in danger for a lack of court funding, the human impact of child custody cases, the human impact of not getting trial dates. And with that message, it seems to resonate more and more with those elected officials who may not be particularly familiar with the court system. With that brief summary, I would like to take a moment, if I could, to show the video. I'm hopeful most of you have seen it. It runs about 3.5 minutes. And if I could take your time to just for a few moments take a look at it right now. Thank you.
Our video expert.
I'm Paul Kiesel, co-chair of the Open Courts Coalition. I want to thank you so much for taking your time for the next 3 minutes to hear about why it is so important we adequately fund the justice system in California.
The work you do in the legislature, what you bring to the governor to sign into law, is meaningless if there is no forum to enforce it.
You do not have a truly functioning democracy if you don't have a judiciary.
If the courts are closing, then everyone, including businesses, small business persons, and others, will be denied that opportunity to resolve their disputes.
A fully funded court system is essential to growing California's economy.
Courts, strangely, are much like fire and police. You never think about them, you never concerned with them until you need them.
We were referred an elderly and infirm gentleman. He had just been evicted from his home. He had no money for first and last month's rent or to move. The eviction had been unwarranted and unjust. So our lawyers went to work immediately. They went to court. They got an emergency writ preventing a lockout. But the order preventing the lockout arrived too late. He had passed away in his car. It was a cold and rainy night. Make no mistake about it. What we're doing here saves lives.
Fundamentally, unless we are adequately funded, we do not have three co-equal branches of government.
I want my colleagues in Sacramento, and with deep respect, I urge this upon them. Just remember, your obligation to the Constitution is to make sure that the courts of justice are open to all, from the poorest among us to the most successful.
This isn't a hypothetical. We're seeing the devastating effects of court cuts on our clients every day, from battered women unable to get their restraining orders to seniors in foreclosure unable to get their day in court. This is real and it's happening now.
But where do we go for justice? We go to the courts. Our courts need to be open, accessible, and have adequate staff.
Without fully funding our court system to ensure equal justice for all in a timely fashion, one of the fundamental principles of our society and our democracy is severely threatened.
As I speak to the legislators about why we need funding for the court, let me just say that the court system is the most powerful protector of our freedom.
The courts are not set up to be advocates for themselves, and thus lawyers and other stakeholders in the judicial system are speaking out.
The priorities that we all face, all of us in a position of leadership, are varied and they are diverse. All of those issues, ultimately, if not resolved at an earlier stage, end up in a courtroom where justice actually occurs on that issue. It is fundamental to our system of democracy.
Now our court system is faced with a kind of piece-by-piece demolition because of these budget cuts. So I'm very hopeful that the legislature will act and restore the funding that's been cut, because without that, we are going to be a less safe place to live. And we deserve better. The people of California deserve better.
Justice delayed is justice denied. That's going to be the case in every one of our trial courts if we can't get adequate funding for the courts.
Okay, so again, we've gotten a tremendous amount of positive feedback on that video, including from members of the legislature. Our group is extremely energized. They're extremely dedicated, and we believe we're just starting to get momentum right now. And the impact you've seen so far is just the tip of the iceberg, and we're ready to keep working. So thank you for your time.
Thank you, Neil.
And I want to make a point, both for folks listening in and for the council, that the Open Courts Coalition took this on themselves. This was their initiative. It was their money. It was their production. No state money went into this production, but you can see how powerful it is. Now, our staff did produce another very brief video that I would like us to see before we begin any conversation and discussion that we'd like to have. Can we show that?
California's judicial branch is in a fiscal crisis with severe consequences for the courts and the communities they serve, especially the most vulnerable. $653 million in cuts in the last 4 years. This year, legislators and the governor chopped the court's operational funds by $350 million, ongoing cuts, then took another $310 million from the court construction fund. And Governor Brown warned of more cuts if tax revenues are insufficient. The result? Nothing short of devastating for the branch and the people it serves. There have been staff layoffs all over the state. Los Angeles court pink-slipped 329 people. The San Joaquin court let go 45. Sacramento had 885 employees 2 years ago. They expect to be down to only 600 this year, hanging on by their fingernails, according to the CEO. The San Francisco court lost 67 employees.
Which means that reports can't always be done timely in terms of recommendations regarding conservatorships, guardianship matters. And these are the parts of the community that are the most vulnerable, the elderly and the young. It's a very serious problem.
I worry that it's just a matter of time when somebody who needs a restraining order doesn't get it served, and something bad happens. And I worry for the children of these clients.
Oh, it's a huge concern. I work for a nonprofit who represents tenants who are being evicted, and there have been so many delays. The potential for things going really wrong is there. It's very definitely a definite hardship on people, and especially very low-income people who are trying to represent themselves.
23 courts have shut down courtrooms.
It happens very frequently, more times than not, that there is not a courtroom available. And sometimes you will have to just have your schedule on standby, witnesses, clients, for as much as a week. And then you'll be told that your case is continued to some later date.
To get to hearings oftentimes is taking twice as long. It's just complicating the administration of even a simple case. Simple auto accident case went from getting it to trial in 12 months to, you know, who knows when.
Placer also closed courtrooms, two of them. They cut staff by 30% and shut down the youth peer court and family law case management. San Luis Obispo has closed the Grover Beach Court, and they withdrew funding for a program helping abused and neglected children. Most courts have significantly cut back customer service hours.
We've reduced our hours so our people can start working on the backlog. In our traffic department, we have an 11,000 trial backlog. Those people are entitled to a trial. We want to give them a trial. But we need the judges and the support staff.
A close friend of mine that had a dissolution that she was handling herself, she had to go and stand in line for days in order to get her papers filed. And there were some days that the courts were simply not open and the papers could not get filed.
In Contra Costa County and Alameda County, that's a real problem. If you don't get to the clerk's office by 1 o'clock, you've got 100 people in line ahead of you to file. And that's really difficult.
It's a cost for my client for me to wait in line. It loses me clients also because I have to charge them for my time to wait in line.
It's also bad for businesses when they can't get their books cleared, when they need to carry pending litigation on their books as a possible liability.
In fact, business people spoke up loud and clear at 4 budget impact hearings around the state. Justice Zelon remembers well what they said.
The lack of certainty is really going to hurt us. It's going to hurt us and make it impossible for us to move forward. And if we don't know we're going to get trials, and if we don't know we're going to get the court services we depend on, we don't have the certainty we need.
At Santa Clara Self-Help Center, the staff is down 20%. They see about 44,000 people each year and turn away many.
When they need more help, we have less help to give them.
When we open at 8:30, by 9 or 9:30, we're sold out for the day. So just imagine you have been in line since 7 o'clock, 6 o'clock, and you're told, oh, sorry, you have to come back another day. And people just give up.
This scene is typical. Virtually every self-help center in the state is overwhelmed with the indigent and the newly poor.
The tendency to think of this as some abstract problem happening to abstract people, and this is about pushing paper, is just absolutely wrong. This is impacting families every single day.
Most recently, we've seen a lot of people that are needing a lot more help who aren't familiar with the court system.
San Francisco helps more than 3,500 people a month with a staff that has been cut in half. They turn away huge numbers.
Because of the budget, we don't have the staff. We're not doing guardianships, conservatorships, and step-parent adoption.
And there's simply not enough staff to meet the demand.
It's a tremendous service. It's a shame that budget cuts have cut into the most valued services in the city.
The value means a lot as far as the health and welfare of my kids.
We have 30 people to get through. We're going to do our best. And at around 10 a.m., I'm going to put a new list out. It's going to be a standby list. We're going to do our very best to help you. Thank you for your patience.
Many people that we serve, if they don't work that day, they don't have a sick day or a vacation day. They're just losing out on their pay. And so we see the frustration with how it's impacting the public.
For our clients who make so little, one day off of work can mean the difference between paying your rent and not. And that can completely destabilize a family.
There's someone out there whose license was suspended from the Department of Child Support Services, and that's how he makes a living. And he's begging us. He's saying, please let me work. Please let me work. And I'm having to say, we're going to do our best.
And family courts everywhere are also getting slammed. Families in San Diego now have to wait many months for a mediation appointment before the judge can get all the information to rule on custody visitation.
I have people, children in shelters for that period of time. We've had families with their children in cars.
In our court, we just got the timeline for emergency screenings. So someone files papers and says there's an emergency situation, 2 weeks before they can get in front of a mediator. So really just look at the kids.
Delays are common in the Orange County Court, too. They used to schedule 30 hearings per day. Now it's 40. It used to take 6 to 8 weeks to get a hearing date. Now it is many months. Supervising Attorney William Tanner tells about a client whose ex-wife wouldn't let him see the kids despite a visitation order.
He filed at the end of September. His OSC date is the beginning of March. So it's almost 6 months that he's going to be without seeing his children. He's really frustrated and doesn't understand why he can't go into court.
It's really unfortunate for the people of California. I think the courts are such a critical part of our democracy, and we need to fund them.
What I'm worried about is the impact on the judicial system overall, and I think as a democracy, that's one thing we can't sacrifice. If we remove that or start chipping away at that, how can we define ourselves as a democracy? I think that the judicial system is a cornerstone of our democracy.
We're talking about people. We're talking about public safety. We're talking about something that's beneath the dignity of the great state of California. And if we don't, as a society, if we don't, as citizens, do something about this, and if the legislature doesn't listen, then shame on them and shame on us.
The Chief Justice is focused on safeguarding the future of the branch with adequate funding.
Our passion and commitment lies with the public. When we're closed, when our hours are reduced, when those with causes, popular and unpopular, can't get into court, what we see, I think, is a diminution of the rule of law, which is our legacy, our foundation, and I submit our birthright. Thank you for your time. Thank you for your commitment. Thank you for keeping this message alive. May we carry it into 2012. And remember that the reason we're speaking, the reason we're using our voice, is because those who cannot get representation or who rely on legal services or pro bono need us to do it for them. That is our duty and our obligation. Thank you.
So, Chief, that's where we are with the budget process, some of the impacts, as you've
California's
seen, of years of budget reductions and the actual impact to court users and people who need the court system, and some of the extraordinary efforts that are being done to try to find a solution and to bring us back, and how grateful we are to the Open Courts Coalition, Neil McCarthy, and the Bench Bar Coalition.
Thank you. And before I open it up to questions and comments, I do want to say that I am grateful for the remarkable and extraordinary advocacy that has been given to the branch on behalf of the Bench Bar Coalition and the Open Courts Coalition. This is an issue that we have recognized over the last year needed a voice, and we came to the attorneys, and the attorneys responded splendidly and beyond our imagination. And to hear the future efforts, Neil, is absolutely thrilling. And we're grateful for all the efforts you do on behalf of California and behalf of the most needy who need to get into court to resolve the issues. You know, it is the cruelest of ironies that as the state faces its worst cumulative fiscal crisis and people, the most needy, lose benefits and services and privilege, that the courts that stand to right those wrongs have been really cut and eliminated, and in some instances with all of these closures and the time frames rendered ineffective. So we thank you very much. And those are incredible videos. Appreciate that. I think Judge Rosenberg, you had a comment.
Yes. Oh, just a quick comment. I do want to say this on behalf of our 58 trial courts, which make up about 85%, I think, of the judicial budget. You know, the judicial budget is actually a very, very small portion of the overall state budget, but obviously important in many ways. I do want to echo the comments of Kurt and Ron, Judge O'Malley, and Mr. McCarthy. Enough is enough. We've really been pushed to the wall. What I want to emphasize is the concept that we do have three branches of government. The judicial branch is a co-equal branch, and we can only be pushed so far. We have a lot of judges, but we are a big state, and every one of those judges is a constitutional officer who is entitled to have a courtroom and sufficient staff to do the job. You know, a judge without sufficient staff, without a courtroom, is not able to do his or her work. I just want to leave you with an analogy. If we have three co-equal branches of government, which we do, if we were to say, well, we have 140 members of the legislature, but we're only going to fund you so that you can have sufficient offices and staff for 120 legislators, that would be an unacceptable impact on a co-equal branch of government. Yes, we're having a governor, but we're only going to give the governor 50% of the staff that he needs. That would be unacceptable. And the same is true with the judicial branch. You can't just push the branch to a point where there's inadequate funding for the judges. And we have too few judges. That's the remarkable thing about it. We have at least 350 judges less than we should have. We've given these judges more responsibility with realignment. And the legislature and the governor are saying we need more judicial resources in family and juvenile to spend more time on these important issues. Putting all these impacts and responsibilities on the branch and not giving us the most basic funding levels to have courtrooms open and adequate staff is unacceptable.
Judge Herman.
Just 2 points. One, on behalf of the Commission on Access to Justice, and two, as a former dues-paying member of the State Bar of California, I just want to extend my extreme gratitude. The bar always comes through. We have four wonderful attorney members here, including Angela Davis, former member of the State Bar Board of Governors. And we could not ourselves accomplish the message of the impact of the budget cuts on the court without your help and the hearings and efforts that you're doing all over the state. The Bench Bar Coalition, the standing committee of collaboration between the judges of this state and the lawyers of this state in terms of promoting access to justice. And, of course, most heartrending is the impact on access to some of those who are the most disadvantaged amongst us in this state. So, again, my gratitude as a former member of the bar, former dues-paying member of the bar to the attorneys of this state. Thank you.
Miriam Krinsky.
And I couldn't help but notice Joe Dunn in a number of those photographs. And, Joe, thank you for your extraordinary effort on our behalf.
Well, I want to thank you all as well, especially the Open Courts Coalition. I really think that this is the first time that we've seen a rallying around these issues. And I think it's recast the dialogue because, as the videos make clear, I think as today's LA Times editorial made clear, this really isn't about what kind of court system we want to have. It's about what kind of community and society we want to have. And what's been lacking, I think sorely lacking, throughout the last couple of years, not through any lack of effort, but unfortunately simply been a void, has been the face of those in our community who suffer when our court system is squeezed now as it is to the breaking point. I was particularly moved. I think the videos are phenomenal, and I've now seen them a couple of times. They're still great, even when you watch them for the second or third time. I was also particularly moved by Justice Zeilon's report and account at the last council meeting in December. And I'm just wondering, Kurt or others, I could see her remarks being a good audio link, if excerpted, to send around. And it was my understanding that there was to be some kind of written compilation of the stories that she recounted. You know, I think these stories did a tremendous job. I think her stories also brought in the faces of the children who are suffering, the families that are not getting reunified, the domestic violence victims. You know, those stories were referenced as well in these videos, but, you know, I think she had a very rich account of those. And videos is a great way. Audio links may be another way, and obviously a written compilation would be another way to get this word out. So just throwing it at you, Kurt, I know that, you know, there were to be efforts. I'm just curious whether that's something that will be coming together soon.
Yeah, and Miriam, particularly on those comments, you know, that's one that I think the chief was hand-delivering when she met with the LA Times editorial board to share as well, and we've been certainly sharing that with members of the legislature. I should also just be clear about one other thing. In all of the visits that are going on, I think, you know, Neil and I the other day bumped into one another, walking out, and he's walking in to the same office. So messages are getting delivered. But I also want to, Chief, you mentioned earlier today the Chief Justice is also burning the shoe leather on this, that we've had the opportunity to meet with the legislative leaders, the budget chairs, the budget subcommittee chairs, to convey the Chief has essentially walked through this same budget approach. So the message is coming down right from the Chief Justice, and it's certainly the message that I carry from all of you on behalf of the Council and with the BBC and the Open Courts Coalition as well.
Thank you. Judge Friedman.
Hopefully in a week, the misguided distraction of AB 1208 will be defeated once and for all, and as a united branch, we can focus on what is really important, which is restoring these cuts, which is something that all of our time and all of our excellent Office of Government Affairs time should be focused on, rather than having to defeat something as foolish and misguided and divisive as that legislation.
Thank you. Tim Turner.
Thank you, Chief. Mark Robinson and I were talking while the videos were playing about how powerful they are and how really well edited and put together these videos are. But I'm also wondering, and I think he was wondering, how we can use them kind of in a more effective manner to get the word out as public service announcements. As you know, it's wonderful to link them on the California Courts website, but what other strategies do we have in the pipeline to get these videos out into a wider audience, into, you know, whether it's, I don't know what we can, certainly the branch can't afford TV spots, but I'm trying to figure out ways to really use multimedia and to use the way people now get information to actually excerpt these, make them shorter and snappier, take the very best of the best off of each of those videos and put them into 30-second spots and 15-second spots and, you know, whatever else we can do to try to get the word out to a broader audience.
Well, certainly the branch can't afford TV commercials, but Mark Robinson could. Mark is I know Mark for a number of years. He's a, usually at our meetings, when you come up with the idea, you pay for it. So I am happy to edit the video further down. I think a 30-second spot in L.A., maybe $1 million during primetime, Mark, it wouldn't be that bad. But what happened? The main target for at least our video was the sitting elected officials. So members of the Judiciary Committee, Appropriations Committee, and leadership were delivered a nook where they just pressed play and the video popped up.
Okay.
And they were encouraged to either use that nook for government purposes or give it to a charity. And it did not come from any organization. It came from a group of private attorneys. It had no government money involved in any way, shape, or form. There was about 13 of us who paid for it. In terms of a larger audience, we're trying to get the video viral right now on YouTube with some measure of success, and we're working with some internet organizations to try to push it out. In terms of television, we have not approached that yet, but that's certainly something I can raise at our next discussion next week, particularly that Mark has stepped forward to pay for it now.
I mean, I'm sure community TV, every county has, you know, a public service channel or a public channel. You know, I don't think they would charge anything at all. They love content. They're looking for content. So, you know, they don't get a huge number of viewers. But it's creating that, you know, that groundswell of concern about this, not just in the legislature, but among, you know, the citizens of California, so that it's really on people's minds. It's a little bit in the air. It's a little bit of a buzz. We need to kind of work on, you know, on expanding the circle of people that are interested in this issue.
So, Chief, if I may, we have a captive audience in our courts every day of every week, and I think that some of them. We have a captive audience, yes, jurors, yes. And
yes.
Good idea.
And I'm thinking that hundreds come to the court for that civic duty. And I'm thinking that this could be released to our court TVs to be played every morning, because most courts have kind of an intro program about the courts and serving your duty and how wonderful it is and how thankful we are that they are there. I think this would also be a good opportunity to educate those as to, you know, what we're facing. So I would ask that we can take both of those clips, forward them to our CEOs to have them played for our jurors throughout the course of this budget crisis. I think that is an easy audience to target and for free.
Two things. That's a great idea, and I'm going to call on Judge Moss. And I saw Judge Rosenberg nodding when he heard that information about disseminating that information. Okay. Judge Moss, and then Justice Hall.
Marianne O'Malley must be channeled because
that Judge Moss had that idea.
That was just the exact idea. I whispered to him before.
Great minds, Bob.
And I want to say I did notice Mark wiped his brow when he heard you say that, too. He's much better.
I got his back.
I want my segment reshot with more hair.
Take two. Yeah.
Justice Hull.
Thank you, Chief. I think we were all thinking along the same lines at about that time, and I just mentioned to the Chief, we've had a great deal of support in Sacramento from a public interest channel known as Cal Channel. John Hancock is the president of that organization, and he's particularly close to one of my colleagues, George Nicholson. And I'd be more than happy to make some phone calls to see if we might be able to get some broadcast time through Cal Channel. I don't know how many people they reach, but if they reach anybody that isn't otherwise being reached, it seems like it would be a worthy effort.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Thank you.
I'll just say one last
yes.
thing. I know this lawyer named Joseph Kachet, so
I think we can get some ads up here too. No, I really want to thank our lawyers in California for coming forth. I'm proud of them, and certainly proud of what Neil and Paul Kiesel have done, and the Bench and Bar group, and Danny Murphy and Judge O'Malley. Thank you very much. So this is great to have people like this helping out, because when you watch those videos, those are impactive messages. Those mm-hmm. really are people mm-hmm. that are being hurt. I mean, when I watch those videos, I'm really fired up about fighting for this. And I think if we can get that message out, you'll get the whole state fired up.
Thank you. Hear, hear on those comments. Absolutely. Judge Rubin.
Thank you. Just wanted to say on behalf of the California Judges Association, of which I'm president, and all of our members are the members of the organization, just an appreciation for all the stakeholders and efforts that are being made throughout the branch and throughout the state for people going out to try to get restoration of our budget money. I cannot tell you how frustrating it is for me and my colleagues, many of whom are here today, just to look out across the courtroom and see litigants who are so deserving and tell them, I can't see you again, or we can't see you again for 12 weeks. It's just heartbreaking. I've been in family law now for 24 months. I have 1 year to go. And in just the 2 years I've been here, our times have slipped. Our time frames have slipped and slipped. And so just a word of appreciation to everybody and all the stakeholders who are out there fighting for us. Thank you.
Can I have your autograph?
Yes, if you can reshoot my segment.
Thank you. Any more discussion or comment? Senator Dunn.
Thank you, Chief. To very brief comments in response to Kim's question before, and before Mr. Robinson and Mr. Kachet worry too much, let me add something in response to Kim's question on that score, and then one other thing I want the full council to be aware of that I know some of you already are. On the rescuing Mr. Robinson and Mr. Kachet idea is we at the State Bar are already in communication with an entity in Sacramento who actually oversees the development of most of the PSAs for public entities. The broadcasters are always looking for PSA material to fulfill their obligations, and they always are looking at the public entities that do issues relating to the public at large. Is there any better example than the judicial branch of California? And happy to put that into the mix before anyone knocks on the door of Mr. Robinson or Mr. Kachet along the way. The other thing that I wanted the council to be aware of in response to Kim's point from earlier is in our, at the State Bar's work in collaboration with the Open Courts Coalition, and it's been a great process, and I do also want to add my kudos to Neil and to Paul for their great leadership in that entire process. But in the course of it, what we have done is brought together an infrastructure that, to the best of my knowledge, has never existed before. We have over 280 bar associations up and down the state of all shapes and sizes and stripes and colors, from county bars to specialty bars to ethnic bars, you name it. A little under 100 of them have at least one professional staff person or more. In addition, we have over 100 legal services organizations in the state of California. We have now brought all of those entities together into one communication line on a monthly basis, in which I have a CEO-to-CEO call with all the CEOs of every one of those organizations once a month. Much of the information generated for the Open Courts Coalition has been distributed through that communication process. The presidents of each of those organizations also have, because you know staff will have one line of communication, the elected leadership will have another. They have a monthly phone call as well and regular communication via now a very, very large communication network among all 280-some-odd bar associations and the 100-plus legal services organizations. And I want this council to be aware of that as well, too. It is a great line of communication to reach every quarter of California on any issue that's relevant to the practice of law and to the day-to-day operations of the judicial branch. Thank you, Chief.
Thank you. That's tremendous news. Thank you. Any other comment or discussion? Thank you. Once again, many, many thanks for all of your efforts. All appreciate it. Thank you. this point, we have concluded our agenda ahead of schedule. And as we conclude, if I don't hear any new business, as we conclude then, I would like to end our meeting as we sadly often do at Judicial Council, and that is in remembrance of our judicial colleagues recently deceased. And they are Judge Stephen Allen Dombrink, Superior Court of Alameda County, Judge Thomas Johnson, Superior Court of Los Angeles County, and Judge Wallace Taggart, Superior Court, San Bernardino County. We honor them for their service to California. Thank you. That concludes our January meeting. We'll see everyone again in February. And I wonder if Nancy has any announcements for transportation?